on a spectrum from prohibition, right? Just wipe it out, no more, to abolition and neo-abolition. And neo-abolition is what the Nordic model is based on, where proponents see prostitution as inherently harmful and coerced, and they aim to end sex work by killing the demand for it. And that demand for that transactional sex. The issue with the Nordic model is that there have been disagreements between groups that support the Nordic model and women's rights communities and organizations that say that it's an overstepping of their autonomy to decide what they want to do and what they don't want to do with their personhood. Interestingly, the prohibition policies directly make prostitution illegal and have been adopted in the United States, except for in Nevada. unsurprising, Las Vegas is where you go for all your vice needs, I guess. 30 nations in Africa, over 25 countries in Asia, and at least 20 in Europe. Abolition is the most prevalent approach worldwide, and it makes formalized activities related to prostitution illegal, such as pimping, brothel keeping, and procuring. And as of 2022, at least 62 countries around the world are implementing policies making prostitution illegal. And so this is kind of an exciting conversation in Canada. If the sort of trend is leaning to illegality and criminalization, if the conversation is leaning to, you know, what it would really, really look like to decriminalize things here, then we might be out in front of the cart.
Yeah. It's interesting that it seems a lot of countries are pushing towards criminalization of it. When, if you look at a lot of conversations online and blog posts and articles and things, the titles are all "Why It Should Be Decriminalized." So I find it quite interesting that it's, the conversation is why it should be decriminalized, and yet the law is changing recently to criminalize it further, when that's the complete opposite of what's been spoken about. When I was looking, because I wasn't sure, and I'm still not 100% sure, kind of how many places have actually either experimented with decriminalizing it and seeing what it looks like. But I did find for Australia and New Zealand, they actually were decriminalizing it back in 1995 and 2003, so very like early on. And for New Zealand, they have seen, there was a 2022 review about it, and they said that they've seen improvements to sexual health and rates of sexual health testing and access to health services, and a reduction in exploitative work relations. So in New Zealand, they've sort of seen what they would class as a success in the decriminalization of it, with more people are getting regular sexual health testing, more people are accessing healthcare, which has obviously like made improvements to the rates of STDs that they're seeing. And I find it interesting that they say there's a reduction in exploitative work relations from it. Now, with Australia, they saw similar benefits, but one thing that was interesting was they said that they credit their benefits to the increase in kind of peer sex education more than the decriminalization of sex work. They talk more about how sex education improvements is what's helped with the rates of sexual health testing and everything, rather than decriminalizing the sex work. And
how progressive.
I know. And it's one thing that I also noticed. I read a blog post that was written from someone in Oxford University in England that was talking about, oh wait, no, it wasn't Oxford, it was the London School of Economics. And they were talking about how one of the reasons that we're limited in how we can decriminalize sex work is because sex education in school is not up to standard. And sex education in school is still treated very taboo, which is why we're limited in how far we can have a conversation on decriminalization of sex work. But the final thing that I found like kind of linking to our previous kind of discussion on like how they're further marginalized, is that in New Zealand, with their laws of decriminalizing sex work, they actually exclude migrants from it. And they say that migrants are not actually included in any of the legislation to decriminalize sex work. So if they contribute to sex work in any way in New Zealand, they're risking deportation and other things. And then in Australia, local councils are using zoning bylaws to control where sex work businesses can be set up. And it says they're pushing them to be in industrial areas or to be in unlicensed areas, which then you go on to the topic of safety. So you've decriminalized it, so you've taken kind of a massive step, but you've got some very clear kind of issues with your decriminalization, because you're putting them more at risk, you're putting certain groups more at risk within sex work, which I thought was quite interesting, because you could very easily, when researching, get kind of clouded by, oh my gosh, they're so progressive, they've been decriminalizing sex work since 1995. And you actually further go into it and you're like, well, they've decriminalized it to an extent. And then they've kind of stopped and just left it there. But yeah, it's an interesting way, I think, as well, with what you were talking about, the different ways that countries are working around criminalizing or decriminalizing it. And a lot of it just seems to be like, let's completely get rid of it and like banish it from the land. And there's kind of no way to deal with anything, I think, that kind of frame of mind, because I believe there's a certain kind of, I don't know how to word it, but in some cases, the more you criminalize something, the more you make people want to do it. The more you make some people want to push the boundaries and push the barriers, and there's like a thrill thing of pushing these barriers. It's researched a little bit in sociology to do with young people and committing crime. It's like the thrill of pushing boundaries of like spray painting and vandalism, and it's like, I'm pushing the boundaries, but not to an extreme. And so I think there's a debate of you criminalizing it to this extent, how much are you actually kind of enticing more people into taking part, potentially, but yeah.
Well, go ahead.
For me, as for decriminalization of sex work, if possible, of the abolishing and eliminating the sex work, it should cut off the demands of clients, but in my opinion, it would be difficult to cut off demand of clients. And in this condition, I think informal sex work just spread. That's why for supporting sex workers' lives, decriminalization would be better.
Yeah.
I think as well, I would be interested to know how they want to cut off the demand for sex work, because I don't know fully why, like, I don't know the reasons of why people go to get sex work, but it's an innate biological desire for a lot of it. So how are you planning on cutting down the demand?
I know, it's a curious, yes. Curious thought,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I wonder.
Yeah.
And just, you know, kind of jumping off of what both of you have said, and the ways in which the stigmatization of doing something that is considered taboo, or, you know, whether it's legal or illegal, you know, there's still ways that society sort of looks down its nose at the people who are doing things, and then those people still get pushed into those areas of industrialization, or you know, out onto the fringes where safety becomes an issue, or you know, their ability to do something still might have that thrill, or you know, that they're doing something that's sort of underground. Mm. You know, it's still part of the not mainstream. You know, what everybody else is doing. I really lost my train of thought there, mostly. But
it's like an adrenaline rush type of thing. When you're, it's a lot of people talk about. It's like when you're doing something you're not necessarily supposed to be doing, but you kind of get like a little just rush of adrenaline doing it. But yeah, I mean, if we look at like the stigmatization of it and how. This being such a taboo kind of topic has led to a misconception or misunderstanding of sex work. And you see it with how different terms are used interchangeably that have different meanings. And a lot of the discussion over criminalization of sex work interchangeably uses sex work with sexual trafficking and human trafficking when they're two very different concepts. And this blog post I was thinking of earlier that was from Oxford talks about how there was an article that said, was titled Why Prostitution Should Never Be Legalized, writing that prostitution is inherently abusive. And the person that wrote the article noted that she said every sex trade survivor she'd ever interviewed believes the same as her, in that it should never be legalized and it's just an environment for abuse. However, she interchangeably used sex trade and sex work when she was speaking of trafficking, which is not the same as what sex work is. And that fuels the kind of stigmatization of it when people are associating sex work with sexual exploitation and sexual trafficking and human trafficking, because it was found out that the women she was interviewed were all victims of sex trafficking, which is obviously an inherently abusive area of crime and very different from sex work. Whereas there's the very clear one has autonomy, one really doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was quite interesting seeing the person that wrote this blog post. She then kind of conducted her own study and went to speak to people in the sex work industry. And she said that most of them found it as a way of ownership of their lives. And like we said, of like kind of use it, if you look at it from a kind of feminist perspective, you have empowerment over your body, and female body autonomy is such a thing that we have to fight for, that sex work is a way that they feel they have great power themselves over their choices. And she was specifically talking to lap dancers, and they said that 84% of them were satisfied with their jobs and had like positive body image and were very happy in their lives. And that one third were actually using the money that they were getting from it to fund new forms of education and training in different sectors as well. So it was seen very much that when she interviewed people in the sex work industry, it had much more of a positive kind of image to it, versus someone interviewed people that misused the term, where it has very negative connotations, which she was talking about, but the terms kind of blurred it and it probably made this type of conversation even more murky.
But it's only murky because those terms are being conflated, because they are very different experiences for the people who are engaged in the profession. Right? Sex trafficking is not a profession. It is a hierarchical, abusive situation. But as you said, you know, like even those people who are engaged in sex work, right, they consider the word prostitution a slur because it's not what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right. They're not prostituting themselves to someone else. They're engaging in this mutually consensual transaction that benefits both parties in a way that they feel is equitable, you know? Just like any worker, hopefully it does. And there's certainly exploited workers out there in all kinds of different arenas of life. Sex work is not exclusionary in that way at all. And so I think we have to be really careful about what we're really talking about when we're advocating for you know, the decriminalization and making things okay. Because sex trafficking is not okay.
Yeah. Put that out point blank.
In any way, shape, or form, right? It doesn't matter if you're a kid or an adult. Well, kids don't they don't even factor. Of course, that's terrible and not... But, like, yeah, it's not okay, regardless of who you are.
And some comments I've read were made that because... With sexual trafficking obviously being criminalized and should be criminalized, but because sex work is criminalized as well, it often exacerbates the misuse of the different terms, and that adds to a negative stereotype around sex work because they're both criminalized, which I thought was an interesting kind of take on it because I didn't think of it that way. That obviously one should be criminalized, but the other one is up for discussion. But because it currently is criminalized, and obviously we've seen with like some of the legislative changes that are happening recently, seems to be further being criminalized. It's adding to potentially more harm to safety for the sex work side.
It's interesting to think about that in terms of the laws that sex work is it's enshrined in, right? That procurement process of it's illegal for the client to buy it, but it's not illegal for me to sell it, right?
Yeah,
and how that would get confusing within the sort of different areas of
it just makes it way more complex.
It really
trying
does
trying to criminalize half and not criminalize the other half of it. It's almost like it's trying to make everybody happy type of thing, which it never happens with, I think, really any legislation. It's very hard to be making every person in that country happy with legislation.
Which will never happen.
Yeah, exactly.
That will never happen.
And the more you try to do it, the more complicated you make it all.
Yeah. One of the other things that creates a lot of difficulty is online.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and this digital world that we live in.
Yeah, this is what I find interesting as well. What contributes to sex work online when you have platforms like OnlyFans? And if people are just like posting pictures of themselves, and obviously then people are buying a subscription to see those pictures, where does that come under the legality of it all?
Yeah, because part of that is illegal, right? To advertise and negotiate. And those are available in all of the areas of the internet, from OnlyFans, which is, you know, loginable on your browser here, into the more clandestine corners of the dark web.
Yeah.
You know, depending on what it is that you're looking to get at, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
This whole, as does everything that happens online, it kind of opens this Pandora's box a little bit of what is legal and how do we determine what is legal, what is ethical, and how do you determine safety when that physicality is taken away? Right, because usually we think of safety in a physical harm sort of a way, but there's, you know, mental harms and psychological harms and all of these other invisible harms that are perhaps more insidious even that can happen over the web and through those kind of transactions in that environment.
I think as well it's your having it, it also kind of depends on how you're defining sex and sex work. When you're looking in the legislation, it's like you cannot buy sex, you cannot advertise sex, you cannot make money selling sex and things like that. But it's like, what are you defining sex to be? Are you defining it to be that the actual act, or like how people post kind of explicit images of themselves, is that counting as sex work and sex or not? It blurs it in the legislation as well. And I think this is a common issue. We speak about it in sociology quite a lot, of like being careful on how you operationalize terms when you're doing research. How are you breaking it down as to what's included and what's not included in a definition of a term? And I think that's one thing that's most likely missing from a lot of legislation around sex work, is what are you defining as sex work? What is included in that? Because that adds to the blurriness of digital, because digital makes everything more confusing and blurred.
Yeah.
As a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I see you nodding your head a lot, Totoro.
For me, I completely agree that Rebecca mentioned that the definition between the what is sex work and what is not sex work is unclear. Then I'm from Japan. Then in Japan, it's called papakatsu. That it means that the women have a sexual relations with men, and then a man pay money for sex to men, to women. And yeah, I completely agree that the definition is so unclear.
Because even there, it's just saying like you pay money, someone receives money, but doesn't necessarily say, but to what? necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like, sex right. work is an overarching term. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in Japan, if it's mm-hmm. specific about a man pays a woman,
yeah.
right? Mm. Well, what about gay sex work? And mm-hmm. what about the transgendered mm-hmm. folks? Yeah. And, you know, what about the fringes of sex work? Mm-hmm. What's the definition and mm-hmm. what's the terminology there?
Yeah.
And how does that squeeze either between the lines or outside of the mm-hmm. lines to not even factor in to doing the thing that you think that they might be doing because mm. it looks sort of kind of the same, but it isn't by definition, right?
Yeah.
Right.
There's this issue as well in English legislation regarding rape laws. The definition makes it impossible for a woman to be a rapist. It's specifically mentions a man. And so you're thinking, right, so this legislation doesn't exactly work for every scenario that could happen, completely excluding out, like, gender-expansive communities and everything. So
yeah.
It's all around this taboo topic. The legislation is just not defining it well enough.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know if it was you at the beginning of the show, Hotaro, that had said, you know, if the government supports it, and the government needs to support it, but without the voices of the community and those people who are actually engaged in the sex work, mm-hmm. without their intel, then policies and legislation is going to be lacking in definition, in the breadth of what we're actually talking about, and the sort of levels of ethical and safety measures that need to be in place for something to actually be working.
Mm. And this is where the Hot Pink Paper campaign is such a useful thing that's happening, and such, like, the Women Transformers is such a useful organization, because they're going to the community and they're getting what the community wants and the community's voices, and then going from there in regard to women and, like, gender equality, which is what needs to happen, because going from male-dominated government down isn't going to be the way to go in regard to these specific issues.
No.
If you're looking at, like, getting clear definitions and encompassing legislation for everybody.
Yeah. And I, just on a personal note there, I think we've got a long way to go, because mm-hmm. if women are not enough at the table in a professional manner, right, women and those people who are engaged in sex work,
mm.
who are very much looked down on and marginalized, and their voices are not going to be considered with any level of sort of knowing or expertise in terms of, you know, what people think they need,
mm.
because those, like, there's always this level of, I don't know, white saviorism, or we know better because we're not doing the thing that you're doing because it's illegal, and we're not doing the illegal thing, right?
Yeah.
That there's sort of this moral high ground, I guess, that disallows those voices to participate, and that mm-hmm. is a danger.
Yeah, I mean, as you think as well, like, we're still yet to see a female president of the United States, for one, mm-hmm. like, still yet to see one of that happen, and it was only, like, recently, I think it's in the UK, we've now had 3 female prime ministers, I believe it's 3, but if you look at the gap between the first and the second female prime minister, it's many decades, and, like, we've only just had our first, I think it's black female leader of the Conservative Party, and that's only happened this year.
Right.
So
we have run out of time.
Yeah.
On this murky, muddy, complex topic of decriminalizing mm-hmm. sex work. Hopefully you've gotten some tidbit information to stew about in your own heads and wrestle about with that. Amy Goodman will be right up with some more things to wrestle with.